Hey, you want to support all the Upstairs Studio podcasts? It's as simple as this. Use our Amazon link when you shop Amazon. We get a small percentage of what you spend. You don't pay any extra. You get your stuff from Amazon. Everybody wins. Where do you find the link? Well, it's on the Explorations Early Learning app. You can find it on the Explorations Early Learning website. If you don't find it in those places, just get a hold of Jeff on Facebook or via email, and he'll hand deliver it to your inbox. Thanks for your support. Bye-bye.
Welcome to the Dirty Playologist. It took some doing, but we drugged Keisha and Barb into the studio to record. They're going to be digging deep and getting to the roots of play. Things like knowledge, skills, understanding, and power. Here are your hosts, Keisha and Barb.
Hey, here's part two of the kit. That's right, the kit. Keisha and Barbara are going to be back. I spliced in the last couple of minutes that you heard last week, and here's the rest of their conversation. It was a long one. Good stuff these ladies are producing, huh? Here you go.
Got a nice little kit underneath who's dry and clean.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I am looking so forward to getting into the forest, and I guess what I like so much about it is it's the freedom, like the freedom that they're going to have in a space that they'll be able to make their own. So I just, yeah. I can't wait to observe the process of them, I guess, engaging with the space and getting to know the space. I'm almost kind of thinking about not bringing a kit until after they've experienced just the bare space. So having them experience that a couple times, and then based on what they need or what they've asked for, or what their play seems to need, I could create a kit, which 100% I know it's going to be. I mean, just from knowing the children and knowing children in general and looking at the space and even like the urges that I got while I was there, you know, that child came out of me, buckets and cups and containers and even nets to, like, you know, catch water or catch fish or things that are floating around in the water, were all things that came to mind. But I do think that it will be a much more organic. I don't know. Yes, that's the word. A much more organic experience if we go without anything at the beginning.
And yeah, then, and like I mentioned at the beginning of when I started mine, we also didn't have, I had very few things in my
kit. Yeah, I remember you saying
the same thing, shovels and buckets, and that was pretty much it. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the kit has built over the last 5 years.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I definitely think building it based on their needs, and that's why I say, like, that's what we have right now, and I can't remember anything else, likely because we probably have other stuff in there, but I've taken it out because the kids haven't been interested in it anymore, and now I just can't remember. Mm-hmm. Because it, like you said, it's an organic process.
Yeah. So. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And also because you're providing the materials that they're asking for, you're giving them ownership over that. You're letting them mm-hmm. own their play, because it's no different. I guess in my mind, it's no different than invitations, which I'm going to mention again, or setting up the play for them, if I just fill up this kit, as opposed to allowing their play and their needs to be what fills up the kit. So,
yeah.
Awesome.
And another thing, too, about the kit that I just realized when you were talking about that is, in the wintertime, I don't bring the kit at all.
Okay.
And that might sound strange, because it's like, well, it's winter, shouldn't you? But I actually find what happens is when I had the stuff out in the wintertime, it was completely ignored. Because wintertime, again, everything changes on the seasons. The kids' play changes on the season. And in the wintertime, the focus for the kids is on keeping warm. And so what ends up happening is they're focused on games that are running, that are doing lots of motor stuff. So running, hopping, they're tunneling, they're doing lots of different activities like that, and they don't need any loose part materials for mm-hmm. that, because it's stuff that they're doing, and the loose part materials actually slow them down. Yeah, so they're doing mostly physical play. So in the wintertime, if the kids did need something, I would definitely consider bringing it. But every time, you know, I brought the kit, and they never needed anything in it, and so I stopped bringing it, and we've never needed it through the wintertime at all.
And you go straight through the winter. You go when the ground is completely covered in snow. Now, okay, so here's my question for you when it comes to fall and winter in the water. What I'd like to do and what matches what we believe is allow the children to decide if it's too cold for them to put their fingers in the water or not. What do you do when it's wintertime and the children are there with all of their gear on and the water's there? How do they interact with the water and what are your guidelines around that?
That's where it gets kind of tricky. Because safety is, like, at the Forest Kindergarten, our basic rule is nobody tells anybody else what to do unless it has to do with safety. Mm-hmm. So because we're a completely outdoor program and we don't have a building to go to, I have to be a little bit careful in terms of things like frostbite, in terms of anything like that. So if it is cold enough that they're going to put their hand in the water and then they could possibly get frostbite and or mitten in the water and they could possibly get frostbite from that, then I would step in and say, no, you know, like this is, it's a day that we're staying away from the water. And we'll talk about why and we'll talk about the dangers and the kids all know exactly what the reason is that we're staying away. If I had a program that had access to indoor, then I would definitely allow a lot more exploration because then if a kid got wet, then it could be inside the building and changing out and getting warm. Mm-hmm. So it's that access to, it's just the safety component that is the variable. But through the fall, most of the time it's only once I get into, well, depending upon the year, December, possibly late November, depending upon how warm or cold it is when we start doing that. Up until that point, I usually let free exploration because I don't have to worry too much about safety issues and frostbite and I mean a big thing is an inability to keep warm. So if they get their mittens wet, especially because you know if one kid is wanting to try it, then of course all the kids are going to want to try it. So if they all get their mittens wet, then that's it. You know, and their parents aren't coming for another 2 hours, and you know there's really not much we can do. So I will step in for that. You might have some flexibility. So if you see the kids wanting to play with the water, you can let that happen, knowing that you can leave early.
Yeah,
and mm-hmm. and go that's back to the center. Yeah. So like I said, it all comes down to access to the ability to warm up, and mm-hmm. if you don't have that, then you kind of have to have a safety overrule. But if you do have that, then yeah, definitely the exploration.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much for sharing so much about your program and inspiring us to make sure that we get out in nature even more than we already do. So where can people find you and more information about your program?
If you'd like more information on me or my program, which is located in Barrie, Ontario, which is B-A-R-R-I-E, you can check me out on Facebook at Barrie Forest Kindergarten. That's www.facebook.com/Barrie Forest Kindergarten. And from there, you can get links to our workshops and trainings that we do. And you can also link to our blog and to hear my perspective on nature, kids play, education, and especially where they intersect. How about you, Keisha?
I can be found at discoveryearlylearningcenter-play.com, or you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/discoveryearlylearning. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll catch you again next time. Wait, Barbara. Barbara, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, I don't want to say goodbye yet because I have two more questions, okay?
All right,
so what do your children bring? What do they carry on their bodies when they come into the forest with you? What are their necessities?
The children basically carry everything that they need for themselves. So they have to have a backpack, and in the backpack, they have to have a water bottle. Sometimes because of weight, I don't actually have them fill it up all the way. They'll just fill it up halfway, especially if they're a little bit younger and they can't carry that much. I find the water bottle is the heaviest thing. So I'll get parents just fill it up halfway, and then we'll just refill it when we're there. They have to carry their snack. And depending upon what the season is and how much they can carry depends upon what their snack is in. Like, in the summertime, we're pretty lazy. We stay a lot of the time at main camp. So they can kind of bring bigger snack containers that are a little bit heavier. But I'll ask in the fall and the winter, I'll ask for stuff in baggies and stuff if they're finding that it's a little bit too much weight. So making sure that there's not a lot of weight in there. They also have to have extra clothes in a waterproof bag, so something even just tied up in a plastic bag is fine. They have to carry their extra gear. So in the fall, pretty much every season, but the winter, that's their rain gear. So they have to have a raincoat and their splash pants in their backpack.
Okay, so they bring that with them all seasons?
Yes, all seasons except for the winter, because sometimes they want to get into stuff where it's like, well, you probably should have your rain gear on for that. We're a little bit more lax in the summertime because it's actually good when they get a little bit wet. But definitely the fall and the springtime, when especially the early mornings can be chilly, they have to have the splash pants and raincoat with them just in case they want to get into water play or mud play. And then any other gear they're not wearing. So if they have a hat and they want to take it off, they have to be able to put it in their backpack in the wintertime. If they have to have their extra mittens in there, but if they don't want their mittens on, they have to be able to put their mittens in there and their hat. Jackets and stuff we usually tie up around their waist or tie it to their bag. But yeah, so anything that's theirs that they're bringing into the forest kindergarten, they have to be able to carry. And like I said, some of them can't carry the big heavy weight, so we do some adaptations just to make things a little bit lighter. But even the smallest kids that I've had have been able to carry all of that. So, and like I said, we used to walk 2 kilometers in, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, traditionally when we go into the forest, we have kind of the same setup with what they need to bring. Although, the idea of putting their change of clothes in a waterproof bag is a new one for me, and I think it's genius. Yeah. So that'll be, I'll add that to our requirements. And also the idea of having that rain suit in there, regardless of if they, you know that they need it as they start out, but just having it in there for the just in case is something that we don't do now, but that I think is a great idea.
Yeah.
So they have their backpacks and their parents drop them off. And then what does the remainder of the day look like? That's another question I have for you. I wanted to get like a feeling for, because where I live, at least as far as I know, there's no forest schools. So I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming in kind of using my past knowledge of children to like kind of visualize what I think it looks like. But I'm curious to know from someone who lives the forest school life daily, what does it look like? What do your days look like?
It very much depends upon the season. Like, we're a child-directed program, just as you are, so I'm sure you know every day looks different but they generally follow us a rhythm to the day, and the rhythm changes based on the season, and I talked a little bit about that in just touching on different areas that we just talked about today and in the last podcast, and basically the they usually in the fall, we usually have most of our newer kids enter in the fall. We only have 2 times that we admit kids, and that would be in the fall and then in our spring-summer session. But we usually get most of our newer kids in the fall. And so we have the newer kids who are coming in. So a lot of the time, the newer kids coming in, they come and they want to have a snack right away. And I tend to notice that when kids are wanting to sort of bond and get to know each other, mealtimes, it's the same as adults, right? Mealtimes are the thing that bonds them. So the kids will all sit around and have a snack, and then that's where they'll start chatting and talking, or they'll want to do something as a group, like they'll ask for a story, so they'll do a story. So usually fall time, it's a snack and a story at the beginning. As the kids get more comfortable with each other, then usually sometimes that'll peter off, or not all the kids will come. After the snack time, they generally do stuff at main camp. So they have projects that they work on or play that they're doing, doing different exploratory stuff. That's where they kind of do their decision-making about what they're going to do for the day. So they'll play at main camp for probably an hour, hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, and then a lot of the time that's the point at which kids will ask to go to a different camp. And fall is, again, the time where the kids usually want to go to a different camp and explore the different camps that we have. We have our main camp, but we also have, I'd probably say 6 or 8 other camps throughout the park that we go to. Most of them have a specific purpose. So we have climbing tree camp, which obviously the point is climbing tree. We have a shelter camp where they built a lot of different shelters. We have hiding camp, so that's where there's this area where they can go and hide under the trees.
And are these spaces used by only you guys?
No, we're in an actual public park, so it's all the areas are open to the public.
Okay.
But I mean, we found little crevices and areas, and essentially most of the time we go, they aren't there, and we do have like backup plans. So like for instance, if they wanted to go to climbing tree park, but something was going on at the shelter that was right near there, if there's too many people there, then we'll usually go do something else because. Generally, most of the time we're there, we're pretty much by ourselves, so it changes the dynamic when there's a lot of other people there, so the kids generally don't want to be there if there's a lot of other people there, so we'll go to a different camp. At that point, they usually pick to go to a different camp, and again, this is fall time. Fall time is usually they want to go out exploring, and, you know, a lot of times they'll be noticing things like the squirrels and going and gathering nuts, and they'll start noticing different shelters that are like small little shelters the animals are putting up. And it's like they're talking about harvesting and getting foods, and they're usually talking about making feasts. And so there's a lot of kind of exploring, gathering, that type of ideas going on. So that's why you'll see a lot of that exploring out to the different areas. And then after we're done exploring, we go back to the main area to meet up with parents. Sometimes they want to stay longer in those areas, so I actually just message all the parents and let them know that pickup's in a different area. And then the parents will actually pick up in that area. But most times they want to go back to main camp towards the end. So we'll head back to the main camp. That's where we'll do, sometimes we'll do a fire and a story time and a snack.
I was going to ask you about that, if you guys did fire.
Yeah, we do fires. Sometimes the kids help start the fires do that. So last year was our first real year of doing fires. Prior to that, like, I love fires, but prior to that, the kids were like, we did one fire, and they're like, come on, it's a fire, come. Oh, fine, no fires. But last year, the kids were much more into fires in the fall, so we did quite a few fires. In the fall, so, and that, again, that seems to be the time when they want to have the fires, when it's starting to get chillier, and they're wanting to do more gathering time, so that seems to be a time when they're really wanting to do the fires, and fires a lot of time, too, instead of doing a story, each person will go down and make a contribution, so some people will tell a story, some people will sing a song, so everybody gets to decide what they want to do for during the fire time, or do nothing at all. And so that's a period of time that we'll usually do that, and then parents will come for pickup. We're going to be starting to do full days in 2 weeks. So that's how our mornings went, so we're going to have to see exactly what's going to happen with the dynamics, because part of the reason we're extending days is basically the kids aren't done. You know,
that's like, what happened to me with my program. When we originally started out, we were supposed to close at 1. And I was like, we're not done playing. Like, this is... And I felt a little bit of a rush in the morning to kind of, I guess, make sure that we were ready for their parents at pickup. So I was like, you know what? We're going to extend our hours. And I think it's the best thing that we've done.
Well, last year they weren't ready for full day. And I know that because at, 12:30 would come around and they would be ready to go. Whereas now the parents come and they're like, why are you here? Can I play for another 20 minutes? Can I? Like today we ended up staying till, gosh, what was it, 1:30 I think. So we were supposed to leave at 12:30. So we're going to be extending the day a bit. So this is based on what our day was last year. So we're going to have to see what our day is going to be like this year. Because some of the kids are still going to be leaving at 12:30. So.
And how long are the other ones going to stay?
The other ones was until 3:30.
Okay. Yep.
So we're gonna see. Basically, I'm thinking it's just gonna be an extension of the play, and instead of doing pickup back at main camp, I might do something small with the ones who are ready to go when their parents go, and then the other ones can continue playing. Mm-hmm. And then it's just going to be an extension, and then everything that I talked about is going to happen, except the play is going to be longer, and then we're going to be heading back for the fire a little bit later.
Yeah, I find that our deepest, like some of our deepest play happens after 12 o'clock when half of our children are napping and the non-nappers are still up. It's just, by that time, they've gotten so deep into their play from the morning that they're at a whole other level. So I bet you that's what the second half of your day is going to look like.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really interested to see, because like I said, I can definitely see that they're not done. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so that would be the fall. So wintertime, usually what ends up happening is they get there, and as soon as they get out of the car, they want to go. Mm-hmm. Snack time has at the beginning has almost never happened. Unless it's a warmer day, it's usually out of the car and go. And the games are all go, go, go. So it's chase games, it's monster games, it's exploring games. So a lot of the time there, they main camp, but a lot of the time they want to go right away to one of the different camps. So we leave right away and go into the different camp. And then, so we go, we explore, there's one area we have that's actually a little bit sheltered, it's like an open shelter, but it's a little bit more sheltered, and so a lot of the kids will flock there and want to go play in there, but there's a lot of exploratory play, playing with the ice, playing with icicles, trying to get things, but it's always move, 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 move. Mm-hmm. So, and then about halfway through, they want to stop. We do cedar tea in the wintertime, too, as a little warm-up. So the days the kids want to do the cedar tea, we gather the cedar and put it in the tea. And then they have snack, and then they can have a little tea. So in wintertime, they all have to bring a mug as well. So
okay, all right. They have a little teeny mug. I was going to ask you, what were they, like, how did you facilitate the tea? But that's so awesome. And so every child brings their own mug in the wintertime.
Yeah, we try for the little mugs. Like the cappuccino mugs are perfect. So we try for just the little teeny mugs so they don't have a big bulky mug to carry around. Some of them get insulated water bottles as well. So they use an insulated water bottle. So we'll dump out their water and then put the tea in. And then when they're done, we'll go refill their water bottle with water. And so we do that usually about halfway through, sometimes a little bit further into halfway through, and then again they're off and playing. So again, I'm not sure exactly what wintertime, we also have a space available for us to eat lunch that's indoor where the kids can kind of get undressed and warm up. So what I'm assuming is going to happen in the wintertime is after the other kids are going to go, we're going to go into the space, have a little bit of warm-up time while they're eating, and then head out for the last little bit to play before the parents come pick up, just to keep warm a little bit. But, I mean, we might also not need that. I'm going to play that by ear, so they might be fine being outside the entire time and eating outside, but at least we have that accessible for if we need it. Springtime. Springtime is usually a little bit of everything, so that's where they're jumping around, and think they're just basically, they get usually to main camp, and they're at main camp, and they want to go and do projects and things like that. Sometimes they'll want to do a snack at the beginning, but a lot of the time they just want to go, they want to do their projects, and they want to,
This has been the Dirty Playologist, back next week with another episode. Thanks for listening.
You can have all the Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio podcast with our new app. Just search your app store, Apple, Android, Kindle. We don't care what you use. Search the app store for Explorations Early Learning. Download the app. Give it a try.
So the springtime is a little bit different than wintertime because they still kind of have that energy from winter and with it being spring. So they're running around a lot more. So sometimes they'll want to do a gathering almost as like a, at the beginning, almost as like a getting to know each other. Like we don't accept kids in the wintertime, mm-hmm. mainly because if there hasn't been a relationship formed by January, it's really hard for kids to form a relationship because they got their big snowsuits on and there's a lot more running around, not as much community-driven interactions. So usually in the springtime, they'll come back together because they can actually sit with each other a little bit more than they could.
I love how thoughtful you are about stuff like that. I love how, like, to me, it's clear that you've really observed the children and their rhythms and not just, like, day-to-day. Yeah. But you've gone back and reflected on your day-to-day observations to see like that long, that long span of time with these children who you have year after year. And yeah. I don't know. I think it's really respectful to not even add new children to the program at a time where you've observed that is not a time for building new relationships. So I just want to say that. That's very awesome. For lack of a better word, very awesome.
Yeah, I think it's really important to always look at what's going on with the kids and what they're ready for. Like, I try not to add more than two or three kids at a time because I don't want to change the dynamics of the group too much unless there is a purposeful, I actually, you know, have kids coming in and seeing that they need a few more kids that do this or a few more kids that do that. So that's one of the reasons we have a very stringent process for going into the forest kindergarten because I want to make sure that the kids all fit together. So, yeah, I think that's extremely important because you're like you said, being very respectful of the kids and the community that they've created because it's mm-hmm. their community. Mm-hmm. So springtime, like I said, a lot of time they'll go out and do that. So they'll either have snack at the beginning or partway through, depending upon the day and what they're up to. And then they always want to go out and explore and see. And it's like you said, they want to see what's happened to the different camps. Because some of the different camps, just because of walking and stuff, they don't want to walk that far. They kind of like to go to a centralized area and then do a lot of the games in that area. It's looking at cyclical seasons, right? You don't want to venture too far from home in the winter time. So springtime, they're like, okay, we can go. So they want to go. They want to explore some of the areas that we haven't been to for a while. We have Front Gate Camp, which is usually only visited in the springtime now. It used to be where we met, and then we would walk into the park. But now it's, you know, 2 kilometers essentially from where we meet. And so springtime, that's where they want to go back to. That's where they want to venture up to there. So, and usually at the end, they want to do, again, another communal snack with a story, probably, again, because they haven't been able to do that through the wintertime just because they haven't wanted to. And then summertime is usually very lazy, very relaxed, laid back. A lot of the time, we don't leave main camp. Like, we haven't gone to a secondary camp, I could probably say 2 or 3 times in over the entire summer we've gone from main camp. They're getting very settled at main camp. They get their projects. They get whatever games that they've got going on, and they stay settled, and they don't want to venture out. They don't want to move. They want to stay where they are. And so a lot of the time they'll come. Sometimes they'll do a snack at the beginning, but most times they're just right into their play, and then partway through they break. And as part of their play, they'll do the snack, or they'll do it within the same area while other kids are playing. And then again, they go back and do the play. But they don't want to actually move on to a separate camp at this point. And it just seems to be the summer thing of, we're here, we're settled, we're staying. They've done their exploring from the spring, so now they're settling in and enjoying the fruits of their labor, I guess is a good way mm-hmm. to say it. So I'm expecting a big...
In the summer, are they in the water a lot?
No, actually, surprisingly enough, they are not. Fall is the biggest time for the water. They really go into the water in the fall. Summer, they usually, you know, they'll go in and out of the water, but it's not like a main focus for the summertime. I thought the same thing, that in the summertime they would do a lot of water play. I'm still not sure I figured out the process exactly behind that, but Yeah, they're very interested. They'll do water play outside of it. Like today, the two kids made fishing rods, and they were fishing. But they didn't want to go in. So one of them actually dropped their fishing rod in, and they were kind of hemming and hawing because they were trying to figure out how to get it without actually going into the water. So it's a little different. We do on like super hot days, we take a break from our forest kindergarten, I guess is the best way to say it. We do water days where I bring sprinklers and water play. And we just basically play in the water all day long. And they have bathing suits, so they don't have to wear the forest kindergarten uniforms. So they have bathing suits because we're not in areas where they have to worry about ticks and brush and stuff because we're in a very open fielded area. But then what I started finding, because this year we've had a lot of hot days, so what I started finding was they upped their tolerance. So at the beginning, the first hot day, oh my goodness, they just wanted that water all day. They're running in sprinklers. They were, you know, gathering water and dumping it and all this water play. But then by the time we had the same temperatures about 4 days in a row, they did water play for 10 minutes, and then they were off doing forest kindergarten for the rest of the day. So
I think one of the really good things about being in the forest, too, is that you're in the forest, so it's not that direct beating sunlight, so you do get that shade.
Yeah. And I think that's a big part of it, too, is because where we are, I call it forest kindergarten magic. We just have this magical bubble around, you know, where, you know, we've had thunderstorms go around us. We've never actually had thunderstorms hit, because I've only ever had to cancel once because there was a thunderstorm. A lot of the time there'll be like forecast for like, and it waits, you know, like we had one time was forecast for huge thunderstorms, and what turned out to be later was a tornado. It was supposed to hit in the morning, but then it waited until 3 o'clock and we were gone and done by then. So it was great.
I looked at the weather for Wednesday, which is our first day at this new spot. And it doesn't look so good, but, I'm hoping I get some of that forest school magic from you.
Yes, we're hoping.
Because I don't mind rain. Like, rain or shine, we'll go. But it's calling for, like, thunder, and it looks like it's calling for it all day. But, you know, they're wrong a lot, so I'm going to wait and see.
I always show up and do a site assessment and decide at that point. And if the winds are too high, because I do a tree check as well. Like, every day that I get there, I do a check of our main camp area. So main site check, but I also do a general site check. So checking, especially in the fall and the spring, checking for wind. And again, we seem to have forest kindergarten magic because we've had just, you know, like I've driven home and there's been trees across the road. And yet when I'm in the actual park, there's almost no wind. Like I remember one day when I was running the toddler group, it was very windy. I was like, yes, if we can meet today, we're going to do a wind day. So I showed up. I had all of our wind stuff, like loose part and stuff, and it was just fabulous, and there was no wind in the park. and it was like, no, and that was one of the days where we left, and there were trees across the road, and it was just like, but we couldn't get a little bit of wind? No. So, yeah. But yes, good luck on the weather front.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for sharing. And
no problem.
I will touch base back again. I'll let you know how my Wilderness Wednesday is going.
Okay. Good luck with that.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.